Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. Recently, I've looked at Ring of Steel by Alexander Watson, which is an excellent book and describes the First World War from the perspective of Germany and Austria. I'm going to go back there again in this episode to look at the July crisis, the countdown to the outbreak of war. And this section looks as a really kind of like a European dimension on that, but also situates it much in the perspective of the Austro-Hungarian and the German empires. So without further ado, let's look at the July crisis. And Alexander Watson writes, "The Austro-Hungarian ultimatum issued to Serbia on the evening of the 23rd of July made newspaper headlines across Europe. In Germany, the assassination of the Habsburg heir and his wife had dominated front pages at the end of June, but interest soon waned. It was far from the only news that summer. There was war in Albania, a French state visit to Russia, and at home, by-elections and the condemnation of the well-known Alsatian artist Hansi for inciting class hatred. The sensational murder trial of Madame Callot, the French cabinet minister's wife, who'd shot and killed the editor of Paris's foremost conservative newspaper, Le Figaro, also made absorbing reading for the holiday season. The Habsburg note, however, wrenched German attention back to the Balkans dispute." The Habsburg note, of course, was the ultimatum, or a series of ultimatums, given to Serbia by the Austro-Hungarian Empire, a series of demands, nearly all of which Serbia agrees to. The only one that Serbia cannot agree to is the one that completely undermines Serbian sovereignty, the idea that Austrian policemen and investigators would be able to have jurisdiction in Serbia in order to hunt for the murderers. And this is something that in the kind of the heat of nationalist passions in Serbia would no doubt have brought about the overthrow of the government with kind of public anger. And the Austrians know that the Serbs will have to reject this, which is the reason for in sort of placing it within the list of demands anyway, to push Serbia to the point of war which Serbia will inevitably lose. The Austro-Hungarians believed that there was a ripe opportunity. The military figures that surrounded the government believed there was a ripe opportunity to lay the problem of Serbia, which had been a thorn in Austria's side for several decades, to lay this to rest permanently, and to finally destroy destroy the enemy, bring Serbia to its knees. They just need a casus belli or a reason to go to war. So the harshness of the Habsburg Note startled the public, particularly in Germany, for there had been widespread predictions of a relatively moderate response, that the idea that this would push the Balkans towards a war hadn't really been appreciated, particularly by the German public. Perhaps the German government had a slightly more realistic view of things. Alexander Watson writes, "For all that, the bourgeois press, in accordance with the wishes of the Reich government, insisted that Austria-Hungary's terms were justified. The danger of the move quickly became apparent. Russia's warning on the following day that it could not remain indifferent to any Austria-Serbian conflict raised the possibility of a major international crisis." So in Austria-Hungary, the ultimatum turned the attention of the empire's already distressed, angry and frightened populations away from internal tensions. And previously, what we'd looked at when we looked at the aftermath of the assassination of the Archduke was that not just Serbian, but Slavic minorities across the Austro-Hungarian Empire came under attack from the dominant Austro-German ethnic nationalities. There were small communities and minority groups of Poles, Czechs, Croats and others who had nothing to do with the assassination of the Archduke and were not even Serbian, coming under sometimes verbal, sometimes even physical attack. And these tensions boiling away within this multinational, multi-ethnic empire suddenly are given an external release by this ultimatum. The press has received official instructions on how they should talk about the Habsburg Note. The demands were, it was acknowledged, severe but also completely justifiable and necessary, and they left no room for discussion and did not exclude the hope of maintaining peace. So newspapers were there to present the population as entirely behind the initiative. Newspapers did largely what they do now when a government chooses to go to war. There are a couple of dissenting ones normally, but in most countries the press will stand in lockstep behind the government. And the Austro-Hungarian press was very much, you know, house-trained, shall we say. They understood precisely how to respond to power. The impression that Austrian newspapers gave were that the people of Vienna, the Viennese, were seen as being, you know, very calm and serious, but really rather relieved that action was being taken against Belgrade. In Hungary, representatives at the parliament who sat on Friday the 24th of July were said to be at one with their people when they agreed that Serbia's provocations could not go on. Clarification, it was insisted, with all means and at any price, is an unavoidable necessity. Entente intervention was dismissed in the parliament as inconceivable. And if it did happen, then it wouldn't really be the fault of the Austro-Hungarian Empire that a major European war broke out, but it would be the fault of Europe in general. So it's difficult, perhaps, to gauge a more accurate picture of the public mood at the time, because obviously many of the accounts give a very kind of official version of things. They are one that could be entirely misleading. On the evening of Saturday, the 25th of July, so 2 days after the note was given to Serbia, there were some misleading reports that Serbia would accept all the demands, and a communication arrived at 7:45 in Vienna and 9:30 in Berlin, which was unsatisfactory, which said that the demand of surrendering, even temporarily, Serbian sovereignty to allow the Austrians to investigate and carry out arrests and do whatever else they chose to do, had been declined. The capital cities were packed full of their citizens who were enjoying the warm weather. They filled up squares, stood around newspaper buildings, waited in cafes and bars. If one wanted news in an age before radio, one went out and looked for it, right? So, Alexander Watson. A particularly large crowd of over 10,000 had gathered outside the Habsburg War Ministry, anticipating that an announcement would be made here. When the ultimatum's rejection and the break in diplomatic relations became known, first through newspaper extras, but then spread quickly by word of mouth, most people went home. Those who stayed, however, created one of the most enduring and powerful memories of the First World War's outbreak. Outside the War Ministry in Vienna, a mood of infectious patriotism prevailed. The crowd cheered the Habsburgs, Austria, the army, and now inevitable war. Stirring patriotic refrains lifted to the sky. The watch on the Rhine, hail to thee in the victor's garland. And most fittingly, the old Austrian song about the siege of Belgrade in 1717. Prince Eugen, the noble knight, adapted to the crowd's expectations of the coming campaign. Archduke Eugen, the noble knight, will battle the Serbs brave and well. He will be a bridge erect, we'll go across direct, and we'll occupy Belgrade. So that's the kind of sentiment that exists there. Now, the idea that this was representative of all Austrians and all Hungarians is, of course, something that's pretty unsustainable. We can't go arguing that, really, because it's even from the people who were in the square that night, those that aren't deeply connected with profound and warlike senses of Austro-Hungarian national identity and nationalism. They're the ones that go home. So when there is this, Watson says, it's this enduring image of Austrians cheering the outbreak of war in 1914. Well, who were those people? They were the sorts of people who would perhaps always had cheered the outbreak of war, and calmer heads had quite literally left the scene. So we've got to be very careful with those kind of enduring images of people cheering for the war, because it's not representative of perhaps everybody.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
One student climbs upon the Radetzky Monument and gives a speech demanding that the people who are gathered sacrifice their possessions and blood for the Kaiser and Fatherland. The imperial black and gold flag is unfurled, and this standard around and under this standard, about 1,000 cheering people march together down the middle of the Ringerstrasse, the great central kind of boulevard of Austria, Vienna. There were similar scenes that played out in the evening. Across the city centre of Vienna, at various of the monuments, outside friendly embassies, and in front of the imperial residence. The whole city, wrote one resident, was seething with excitement. This kind of energy of patriotic fervour. In Berlin, the press were quite explicit about the fact that there was a lot of tension felt amongst the population at large in the city. The people, again, like Viennese, waiting to hear what was being announced. Horror was the most obvious reaction to the Habsburg ultimatum's rejection, writes Watson. Nevertheless, here too, in the city centre, spontaneous patriotic demonstrations quickly formed. These began already around 8 p.m. when the first rumours of Serbia's refusal started to circulate. Groups of people, some carrying Austro-German German or Austro-Hungarian flags, gathered, cheered the German and Austrian Kaisers, sang patriotic songs. Witnesses tell of demonstrations of 2,000, some of even 10,000 people. They paraded arm in arm up and down Berlin's main street, the Unter den Linden, being applauded by spectators in cafes on either side. Patriotic landmarks, as in Vienna, formed the focal points of either demonstration. There were impromptu speeches and there was singing outside the Kaiser's palace, which was unoccupied as he was on his annual North Sea cruise, and on the other side of the Brandenburg Gate, at Bismarck's statue. The crowd marched to the Habsburg Embassy, where they were thanked by the ambassador. Some gathered outside the offices of the Reich Chancellor and were greeted by him. A noisy protest, later criticised in the press, was also held outside around midnight in front of the Russian embassy. Only at 3:45 a.m. were the streets quiet. So, again, the accounts here tell us of something really powerful being triggered and unleashed. And when historians write about the July crisis just being like a something that almost operated on its own. A.J.B. Taylor famously said that the First World War was kind of started by train timetables. That all the mobilisation plans were already in place and just kind of happened automatically. Well, in this case, I wonder, and I'm always kind of inclined to think this because I'm pretty much in agreement with Benedict Anderson on the power of nationalism and the irrationality of nations and this force of kind of social and political identity that nationalism creates. I'm always of the view that this is one of the, you know, history's primal driving forces, and national identity very often sweeps anything else in its wake. So these demonstrations were repeated in the following days as Austria then Germany went to war. In Berlin, a few thousand people marched on the 26th of July. Thereafter, demonstrations waned, they declined, and disappeared in the midweek. the proclamation of a state of siege on the 31st of July and the mobilisation on the 1st of August brought out crowds of an unprecedented size. On the latter date, between 40,000 and 50,000 people gathered around the Kaiser's palace. Moreover, the patriotic manifestations were replicated, albeit on a smaller scale, across the Reich. On the 20th of July, for example, there were processions in major towns like Hamburg and Munich and Stuttgart. In university towns like Freiburg and Jena, other days. In Vienna again, where there had been the beginnings of a mobilisation against Serbia, had been ordered on the 25th of July. There was a scene of huge but organised patriotic demonstrations throughout the following week. On the 26th of July, tram workers, veterans, apprentices, about 15,000 formed a crowd to march to the city hall. 3 days after that, war with Serbia began on the 28th of July. A parade of veterans' associations watched, as it was estimated, by over 100,000 people. They marched through Vienna again, mainly watched by their family members. So the newspapers reported with great excitement that similar demonstrations were happening across the rest of the empire. All divisions were miraculously appeared to have been overcome. Everywhere, wrote the Reichspost, in Tyrol and Silesia, in the Carpathians, in the Hungarian Putza, on the shores of the Adriatic, no less than in the imperial city of Vienna, the population is rising in passionate approval of the decision to fight. So there's something really, really telling and really, really interesting. Both the German and Austrian empires had a number of fundamental divisions within them. Geographically, ethnically, the Habsburg Empire, which if kind of cut back to simply Austria, it was would make a relatively small country. The Habsburg Empire had to hold a dozen disparate nationalities in Europe together under one banner. It's very, very difficult. It's very, very difficult in a century of nationalisms. You know, from the 1870s onwards, the unification of Germany and Italy, and the development, the further developments of France and Russia into more coherent nation states, meant that this concept, this idea of nationalism, was a defining feature of the continent, and this threatened to rip apart a multinational empire. And in addition to that, when you look at Germany had very little by way of national separatism within it. I mean, there were some Poles in the east and some French in the west who had been incorporated into the Reich in 1871. But by and large, social tensions divided Germany, and a war was a great way of putting off these social conflicts in Germany's case, and ethno-nationalist conflicts in the case of Austria-Hungary. The kind of kicking the can down the road, so to speak. Every major power had a version of this. Russia, obviously, from 1905 onwards, was riven with unreconciled and unresolved tensions. Great Britain was arguably on the verge of civil war over Ireland in 1914, and the crises of Union militancy the Civil War, the Suffragette movement, all coincided to as is written in the famous book, The Strange Death of Liberal England, to put a kind of a definite time limit on that that kind of Edwardian world. So the war is seized upon by obviously cynical and opportunistic political leaders and the newspapers who support them, and the war is seen as a useful tool in a way of putting away internal strife and conflict for the indefinite future. The irony being, of course, is four empires would be destroyed by the First World War, and two empires, the two remaining ones, permanently weakened. And it was entirely possible that in the case of Austria, at least, that tensions, that nationalist energies had been unleashed to such an extent that it became politically inconceivable that the government wouldn't make a declaration of war against Serbia. And the government had its casus belli, had its cause for war, and this was precisely really what had been sought after all along, an opportunity, an excuse to crush the Serbs. The intervention of Russia, as we shall see, complicates the matter and leads to the outbreak of a general war in Europe, even though it is assumed by the Austrians that Russia won't really actually become involved. Okay, so we're going to finish there, and I will catch you on the next podcast. As you can see, I'm creating a lot of content at the moment, and the Explaining History website will be coming soon. Do, if you can, come visit us in the Explaining History Facebook group. That's where we'll be doing, you know, a few little announcements and putting some new content in there in the coming weeks and months. So thanks very much for listening, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. All the best. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.